This is Akashvani. In the weekly program, Current Affairs, now we bring you a discussion on important bills in the Parliament. The participants are K.V. Prasad, political analyst, and Chetan Chauhan, senior journalist.
This week in Parliament, especially in Lok Sabha, there was a major discussion on key bills, and four bills have been passed, including one on the banking laws, railways, civil aviation, and disaster management. We have with us senior journalist and political analyst, Mr. K.V. Prasad. Mr. Prasad, one's overall perspective you can provide that after a logjam for many days, Lok Sabha was able to do a lot of business in the past 1 week and have passed some of the important bills.
You're right. Actually, the part of it is because of agreement which was reached between the opposition and the parliamentary managers on the government side, which had agreed for a discussion on the constitution marking the 75th anniversary. And the debate got underway today and will continue till Saturday in the Lok Sabha and 16th and 17th in the Raj Sabha. So Lok Sabha, we saw certain business being transacted, and we've heard these members of opposition say that they want the houses to run. So I think that is one of the reasons why you see these bills have progressed.
Let's discuss first railways bill, because it aims to include the Railway Board Act of 1905 in the Railways Act of 1989, and also brings in some sort of clarity, corporatization of the railway board, and some changes in the railway management. So what are the key aspects of the Railways Amendment Bill 2024?
Yeah, I think the amendment, you know, was introduced in August and came up for it. As you rightly pointed out, it repeals the 1905 Act, which is the Railway Board Act. And because the provisions of it were already subsumed in the 1989 Railway Board Act into the 1989 Act of the Railways. So I think this is what it did. And then we had the Joint Parliamentary Committee while examining the Railways Bill 1986. In the past, it got incorporated. So this is more of an administrative, where the composition of the railway board, the number of members, the kind of remuneration, what kind of qualifications, all that gets described in it. Because of this, they've kind of regulation. The key issues is improving in railway functioning. That is one of the important things they were looking at, because it's a government department and the government has a monopoly over it. So that's where it is. It's kind of the way things are changing today. We all know that railways is competing in certain sectors with the growth of traffic on the airways. So while Indian Railways remains the lifeline of movement for mass transportation in the country, across different states. So this is one of the most affordable and remains the most affordable for people. So that's the importance. And as we heard, technology has changed. Modern technology is coming in, and also faster and safer transportation is the demand of the day, Chetan.
Do you think this amendment in the railway laws will have some sort of an impact on the functioning of the railways? Will the railway board be more corporate, more in regulatory in function? Will there be more private sector investment? Will the PPP mode see coming more in the railways? In other government sectors, we have seen, like in case of highways or in case of civil aviation also, the public-private partnership, the total private incentives are much more than in the railways. So do you perceive that this is an indication that in coming days, the private participation on building a modern railway system will be there?
Well, there is an attempt certainly to move, as I said, to improve the services and be try and see the government. This PPP mode has been tried in a limited fashion. Largely, it was restricted to the IRCTC in particular, or this kind of a thing. Of course, during the debate, many members of the opposition kind of made this charge that this is a backdoor entry of corporatization of railways and private, but that has been denied. But the whole thing is improving the structure, setting up an independent regulator, giving more powers and autonomies to the various zones of the Indian Railways. The whole idea is to suggest the improve, also to come up with improvement of finance, railway financing, change, you know, rationalizing the passengers' fares or the freight. One of the issues is how to raise revenue. Private partnership is thought of as one of the issues that looked at, because freight remains an important component, because railways is competing with the road transport here. And that's important, because the freight rates go up, obviously the revenues of the railways will get affected, because we also talk about what is known as the cross-subsidization, where the passenger tariffs, especially in the lower end of the travel, lower sections remain low. So these are important things. With the kind of railways is one of the biggest employers in the Indian government, so it has a huge bill. So I think these are all areas that are being looked at and discussed and debated over years. So this bill is trying to move in that direction, Chetan.
KV, the next one, which is extremely, I think, important bill is the Bharti Vayuyan Vidhayak 2024, or the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill, which aims to provide powers to DGCA, BCAS for overall security, and also for investigation of aircraft incidents. So how do you think this amendment in the civil aviation bill and the civil aviation law will foster growth in the civil aviation sector, which we are seeing already there's a lot of demand for flying within the country and outside?
Yeah, because this is one sector that has really grown after we have what we call the open skies policy, where you open it operators to come in and run a scheduled aircraft. It happened almost 20 years ago, and I've seen a quantum jump in the way passenger traffic has gone up, and also the number of airports have gone up in the last few years. We all know that as a matter of fact. I think this bill, which was introduced somewhere in July 2024 and moved in pieces now, it seeks to replace the Aircraft Act of 1934, almost 90-year-old act, which has replaced rather. Here now, because the act looks for, as you said, setting up of three statutory authorities, the Director General of Civil Aviation, which actually does the regulatory function and oversees safety. The other is the Bureau of Civil Aviation Security, which looks after the security, overall security of the civil aviation sector. And third important component is the Aircraft Accidents Investigation Bureau, which will investigate into the aircraft incidents. So all these are issues that are there because, as you say, it's a sector which has grown exponentially and is likely to grow at a much faster clip. Modern systems have come in. The kind of ease of travel is grown. At the same time, people coming into the sector, you're looking at how do you, because this act will empower central government to make rules on several matters, which include regulation of specified activities related to aircraft, matters related to licensing, certification, inspection, air transportation services, implementation of, you know, the conventions which are related to the International Civil Aviation of 1944. And also the telecommunication convention. So there are certain international obligations one has to follow when you're operating in this sector, because air travel is international and national, and all your many of your domestic carriers fly on international routes. So all these are interconnected. So I think this all looks at how to modernize. While we are modernizing our systems, we also need to keep in pace with what's happening with best practices all over the world, Chetan.
Yeah, Mr. Prasad, one important aspect of the bill is also, I think, two important aspects. One is on the offenses and penalties. The bill aims to enhance the penalties up to 1 crore rupees and 2 years of imprisonment. And also the violation on the rules of carriage of prohibited goods in aircrafts will be there. So, you know, the new offenses which are also coming in the aircraft sector, the bill also provides for penalties for them. But one important aspect is on the manufacturing of aircrafts. The bill aims to provide some sort of standards. So how do you think on this penalties, the regulation, and on the manufacturing, which I think is a very futuristic step being taken in the bill?
You see, manufacturing is one important component because as a country, I mean, we don't really have made a civil aircraft manufacturing of a larger. I mean, of course, there are international players, but Indian aircraft industry, especially in the civil sector, has not. We have the Hindustan Aeronautics Limited, but that's largely does for the military components and the military aircraft in this country, some under license, and that's where it has been. Whereas I think there is one or two smaller aircraft which are looked at largely, but that have been remained. So you kind of encourage manufacturing in India. We are components of aircraft. For instance, I think one of the leading industrial houses has a tie-up with another international plane manufacturers for making its doors. We're also doing some cockpits for some helicopters and so on and so forth. So going forward, you're obviously looking at the manufacturing at a larger base, because also it looks at the larger picture of India is the Make in India concept and, you know, Atmanirbhar Bharat. So increase the manufacturing base in the country. So all these sectors are high growth industries. So I think that's where you move into.
We also have with us Mr. Sandeep Phukan, a senior journalist, to discuss the Civil Aviation Amendment Bill. This bill has a lot many features about safety and regulatory work, and it also enhances the fine for various offenses for the civil aviation sector. Can you draw some light on what are the changes the bill aims to achieve?
It seeks to enhance safety. It seeks to tighten the regulatory framework. So some fines have been added, some penal provisions have been made tighter, and they should be in sync with international norms. We shouldn't forget that aviation sector is one sector that is open to international safety audits every now and then. So there is a United Nations organization called ICAO, yeah. International Civil Aviation Organization. It is based in Montreal in Canada. And ICAO professionals come and they evaluate our safety standards. They evaluate our security setup. They evaluate our professional standards and then they rate us. So it is like you have the Federal Aviation Authority in the US. So country like ours, we will definitely seek to be on top of the game. So clearly, anything that is found to be lacking, that needs to be corrected. So in terms of safety for passengers, it has to be in sync or in line with the international norm. And that's what the bill seeks to do by empowering the center in terms of tightening the regulatory framework.
One important aspect of the bill is on the standards that the bill planned to introduce for the aircraft manufacturing, which is starting in India. So, Sandeep, can you draw some light on what are the key aspects and why the government is introducing norms for aircraft manufacturing in the bill?
Okay, so when you talk about aircraft manufacturing, here I would like to point out that, look, world over, as you know, that aircraft manufacturing, that too passenger aircraft manufacturing, that's an extremely highly sophisticated and technical job. And only a few countries in the world or few corporations in the world are actually successful in building aircraft, passenger aircraft. Of course, I mean, the two biggest names, as we know, that the European manufacturer Airbus, which is again a collaboration between France, Germany and Britain, and US-based Boeing. These are the two biggest operators. But in some countries, I mean, Russians have made their passenger, the IL version, the Ilyushin aircraft, you know, Russians have made their aircraft. Chinese have also successfully built passenger aircraft. But we've been trying, we've had some experiments, especially the HAL, Bangalore-based, yes, Hindustan Aeronautics Limited. They have been designing small passenger aircraft. But, you know, we are still quite some distance away from having our own made in India design, made in India, built in India aircraft. We've done that in the case of a fighter aircraft,
yes,
but not yet in case of passenger aircraft. But what we have successfully done is that HAL in Bangalore, for example, they make a lot of these parts even for Airbus. You say the door or, you know, many other system, avionics, many other systems are built there. So this bill will actually seeks to give encouragement to more investments in India, because that will have a multiplier effect both in terms of jobs as well as investments coming and creating more jobs, and also technology, transfer of technology. This bill is though it's been amended many times over, but I think its time has come to India being among the fastest growing aviation market, and we are still among the fastest growing economies in the world. So it's only appropriate that our laws are changed in sync with the needs of the time and take advantage of our position.
Now we are being joined by Mr. Vikash Narayan Mishra, Senior Advisor, Indian Banks Association. Mr. Mishra, the Banking Laws Amendment Bill, which have been passed in Lok Sabha, aims to amend 5 important banking laws. So which are these laws and what impact it will have?
Things are changing. The banking, the law when it was initially made, then banking, I mean, now we are a 400 trillion banking country. There are more than 1,50,000 bank branches. And banking is affecting all aspects of life. So there was a need to bring about certain changes in the banking law, and especially in the nomination matter, then in the threshold limit issues and fees for the auditors, in the governance issues, the reporting issues. So these are the areas where some changes were required in keeping with the requirements. So this was a right decision on the part of the government to have brought about these changes in the banking law, which will certainly simplify what you call the customer's requirement. For example, the nomination now it is for 4 per people. Earlier it was for only 1. Then the nomination is further categorized, can be done, a particular percentage can be given to 1 person. Then there is a line of succession also. So this will reduce the complexities, this will reduce the hardship in the event of something happening to the person who is the nominees. And the people will get their share without much hassles. And similarly, the threshold limit was only 2 lakhs, 5 lakhs earlier to have a substantial interest in the affairs of the bank, especially the private banks it is relates to. So now it has been raised 2 crores. So 5 lakhs, it was a very small amount, you know, and now it doesn't, you know, suit the present requirements. So they have raised it to 2 crores. So that's a good thing. Then the reporting system, earlier it was on 2nd Friday and 4th Friday. So they have made it now on the 15th of a month and the last day of the month. This is in keeping with the international norms. So it will be in aligned with the international standards and it will be more transparency. The system will be more accurate. So just for the sake of following certain practices, we should not follow if it is there is a better off. So then the auditor's fee, you know, the banking is changing and with that, the complexities of the audit are also changing. So when you want to have proper audit, proper statutory auditor, you need to pay them properly. Now the banks, there was a ceiling. You can't pay more than certain amount to the auditor. So now with these changes, then the bank will have flexibility. Certainly if you want to have the quality audit, which every player would like to have, you can have better auditors. So these are the cooperative banks, the tenure of the cooperative banks director. So that has also been raised. So these are the things which will help better banking practices and more flexibility to serve the customers.
One important aspect of the banking law amendment bill is also on the nominees plus the cash reserves, looking at the RBI guidelines. So do you think that these amendments will bring a more cohesive work system between the banks and RBI?
Certainly, if the nominees thing is, it is going to reduce the hardship for the legal heirs or whosoever is the nominee and group of nominees. Suppose there are 4 brothers, there are 4 siblings in a family. Then, you know, normally there is a disagreement and they go to the court. You have to get a succession certificate. Now, during the time of COVID, there are a lot of hardships because the nominee at some time, the depositor has died and also the nominee has also passed away. So you can understand the hardship on the part of the remaining members in the family. So now we have as many as 4 nominees and their shares are also mentioned there. So there is a clear-cut instruction to the bank that in the event of something happening to me, now these are the people who will get this kind of shares. And in the event something happens to the nominee, one of the nominees also, there is a succession line. So this is going to help the transfer of funds to the legal claimant and in a very simplified manner. Regarding the reporting system of the Reserve Bank of India, regarding the liquidity on all, see, regulator has a role to play always to have a check on the affairs in the banks. And these are the through these 2 reporting systems, the regulator has an idea about the liquidity position of the bank, other key parameters. So earlier it was on 2nd Friday and 4th Friday. We do not know what is the status as on the last day of the month because every, what you call the modern system, it is the month end. We always take into considerations in other parameters also. This will help, you know, month end, this is the position. And what will happen in the next month end? So interim, there is a, on the 15th of the month also, there has to be a reporting. So this is, I mean, a much better system than the earlier system. This is going to help the regulator in have better, what you call, monitoring of the banking industry. Now the banking industry has assumed a magnificent, you know, proportion. Our GDP is roughly, you can say, 3.27 trillion. And the banking system deposit and advances put together is nearly 4 trillion. And you know, every member in the family has a bank account. So this is the kind of penetration that has happened with the initiative of the government on the financial inclusion, Jandan, PM Jandan program and all. So we need to have a more robust, transparent and very efficient banking system. So these changes which have been proposed in the bill and which have been passed by Lok Sabha are going to have a very positive impact on the way we do banking, on the way the transfer of money takes place in the event of some mishappening. And also the regulation part, so far this regulation by the regulator on the commercial banks, on the scheduled commercial bank is concerned.
Mr. Prasad, so what is the overall perspective from the banking law amendment bill you get?
See, apart from many things, I think one of the foremost things that we would look at is from the consumer's point of view or for the people's point of view. I think this banking law, which looked at changes, one of the things which applies to most of the people who hold bank accounts is to increase the number of nominees. We all know when we open a bank account or operate a bank account, you get a message about who is going to be the nominee for your account, which means in the unfortunate instance of some mishap happening to the holder of the account, the next person gets identified and is part of the records. So usually it was one. So that, I think, to increase to 4. This would apply to various banking products. These multiple nominees, customers can appoint, say, for the fixed and the recurring deposits, and also access to bank accounts and bank lockers. So this is one area. And I think this was partly required because there was a required was to simplify the process of fund distribution following the account holder's demise and difficulties that one encountered during the COVID crisis. So this nomination facilities is something which is important, which allows quicker and easier release of assets from the accounts or lockers. So there are a lot of documentation otherwise required. So some of this, I think, is being streamlined, knowing to make it easy. In addition to it, I think there's also looking at on the board, the structural side, the directors who are appointed for banks. So there is some substantial interest clause, which was threshold limit of 5 lakhs, is now probably gone up to 2 crores. Then the banks have the right to recommend. They get the to recommend statutory auditors, reporting deadlines have been changed. So some of these issues which were cropping up here and there, I think those were sought to be addressed. And I think this is where it stands, because the way, again, banking sector has grown, a lot of people are using it. So this is where it looks. So this is one important, but I think the most important thing was the nomination aspect, which most people will be benefiting from. Chetan?
One consumer-friendly aspect, I think, was on the settlement of unclaimed amounts. In many of the public sector and the private sector banks, there have been a huge amount of money which have gone to asset accounts or escrow accounts because the claims have not been made. So what are the changes the bill has made to claim the money or the unsettled amount?
Yeah, you see, one thing, this a lot of accounts, I say the dormant accounts of people have passed away without any nominations, or, you know, people did not know, they did not make claims for various reasons. So the money in the account which remains unpaid or unclaimed for 7 years was transferred to what is known as the Investor Education Protection Fund. Now, this proposed law widens the ambit of these funds can be transferred to. So what they have widened is like shares for which dividends have not been paid or claimed for 7 years, or say interest or redemption amount for bonds, which again have not been, you know, paid or unclaimed for 7 years. So any person whose shares are unpaid money or unclaimed money, so it is transferred to IEPF. So this is again, and as you know, IEPF carries out periodic exercise to educate people and investors to kind of make sure that their investments are safe. So this is how this money is used, because in the absence of nobody claiming the money, the government is kept holding. So the 7-year limit was raised several years ago. So I think that is what retains, but I think widens the ambit of what else can be transferred to this account, Chetan.
And also, this law has something on the cash reserves, which the banks can keep for fortnight. Do you think it is a major change that the government has brought, or is it just a technical change that they have brought in?
No, I think a certain level of cash reserve is what the RBI determines. Like every bank has to keep a certain amount of cash with the RBI, which is cash reserve ratio, as it's called, CRR. And this is also decided when the RBI announces its rates. Accordingly, it's there. So I think what has more of technical in nature, the average daily balance is based on the average of balances held by banks at the closing of each day of a fortnight. So the fortnight here was defined from Saturday to the second following Friday. So both days. So this bill would now change the fortnight period from the 1st to 15th of every month and 16th to last day, which means 30th or 31st, or in case of February 28th, in case of a non-leap year, and February 29th in a leap year. So it changes this definition. Basically, it's a technical thing. Fortnight remains a fortnight, but here now we identified from the 1st of the calendar day to the 15th of the calendar day of every month, the 16th day to the last day of each month. So this is where it's a more categorical instead of the Saturday to Sunday calculation.
One important amendment bill which has been passed was the Disaster Management Act, where the functioning of the NDMA and SDMA, the clarity has also been brought in on that. And also more duties have been given to both NDMA and SDMA on collecting data on the extreme weather events, disaster management, technical assistance to authorities, and how to improve managing and responding to the extreme weather events or the disasters. And as we have seen in the last many, many years, 5-7 years, and the number of extreme weather events, especially during the monsoon months, have increased a lot. So, Mr. Prasad, what do you think the changes in the Disaster Management Act, how will it make the central and the state disaster management authority more prone to or more cohesive towards this increasing climate change induced extreme weather events?
Yeah, I think, Chetan, you're right. If you really go back and we jog our memory, we know it was the 2004 tsunami which led to this whole idea of looking at disaster and the management of disaster, because till then we had, of course, various other forces or authorities in play. But a collective, how to have an organized disaster management is what was looked at. So we have this NDMA and then the structure of SDMA. But it's almost two decades since, and in between we have seen, as you pointed out yourself, the climate-induced disasters. We have unseasonal rains. We have unseasonal rains slashing in southern part of India, leading to closure of schools in certain regions, certain pockets, or unseasonal, you know, weather-induced problems in other parts of the country. So state governments have dealt with it with their limited resources or whatever resources they have. So I think this, in a way, decentralizes the way in which you map what's going to happen and be prepared for the worst. And once you're prepared for the worst, you know how to respond to it. Because SDMA is the State Disaster Management Authorities or the District Management Authorities become what we call as the first responders. So if you anticipate, for instance, I remember after the super cyclone of which hit Odisha in 1999, subsequently the state governments had come up with excellent plans, and thereby you heard even as late as a few months ago, when a major cyclone was to hit Odisha, lots of people were shifted to safety. So this gives you a very good idea, anticipating issues, getting ready for possible strikes by climate problems coming up, and then making sure that the loss to life and property is minimized. If not, whatever can be eliminated, eliminated best. You cannot, but the whole idea is to prepare for disaster. And this bill would add certain functions for authorities at their respective levels, which includes what? You know, they take periodic stock of disaster risk, emerging risk, providing technical assistance to authorities who are supposed to undergo it. So these are certain issues that are more micromanaging the whole thing, is the way I look at it.
Yeah, you know, as the minister was also saying yesterday in the House, this also tries to integrate, there is a lot of research being done on disaster, on extreme weather events in the country. There are places which has been described as vulnerable to extreme weather events. So research centers have come up there, like in Wayanad, there is a research center which has come up which can predict whether there will be how much rainfall in the next 3 days, 4 days, in which specific area. So in many places, vulnerable, this disaster prediction is being done at the micro level. So this law, I think, also aims to integrate the research, the scientific inputs with the disaster management at the ground level. Apart from this, I also wanted to discuss today in the Lok Sabha, the discussion on 75 years of adoption of the Indian Constitution has started, and it is a landmark day for all of us. So on the Constitution debate, what do you think is happening and what's going on in the parliament?
Well, I think it's a very, very important subject. I was listening to most of the debates in the first half. The Raksha Mantri opened the debate. Then, of course, the opposition members spoke. I heard part of it. It's also a very educative process where a lot in certain aspects we don't seem to know or have slid back in our memory gets refreshed. There are certain new points you always learn that, oh, this also happened during the Constituent Assembly debate. So I think it's a very important thing. And as students of Indian political science or even otherwise, every citizen should have spent time to read and go through what the Constitution makers did for us at that time of the 75 years ago, how much of it. By the way, I did read a certain components of Constituent Assembly debates, and it's an amazing experience. And for those of us who could not read it in complete, because it's available, it's a 5-volume thing. It's quite a voluminous experience. But otherwise, listening to the debates helps you to crystallize and also get the whole thing in one go. And also the differing viewpoints, even during the debate, not now, what happened in the Constituent Assembly, why were certain things being said, in what spirit they were said, and how the document came about in this form and fashion. It's a journey that one must undertake, is what I believe. And I think for those of us who could not, it's like reliving what happened in those 2.5 years when the Constituent Assembly put itself to the task to give this document to the country and the people of India.
Yes, Mr. Prasad, you know, if you read through the discussion that happened in the Constituent Assembly, it is highly illuminating. And I will also request our listeners, if they get a chance, they can read some of these debates, discussions with the Constituent Assembly are also available online. It will educate people that how what we are today, it is because of the discussion in the Constitution we have. The Parliament this week discussed the 4 important laws which we have discussed with our experts. They will have a huge impact in the coming days, and you can all see what sort of improvement in the systems it will bring. With this, I would like to thank all our listeners for joining us.
You were listening to a discussion on important bills in the Parliament. The participants were K.V. Prasad, political analyst, and Chetan Chauhan, senior journalist. This program was produced and presented by the News Services Division of Akashvani. You can listen to it on our mobile app, News on AIR. This program is also available on our YouTube channel, News on AIR Official. You may share your feedback about this program through email at airnsdtalks@gmail.com or WhatsApp on 9289094044.